And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Day has turned cloudy here in the Butler area, at least. We had quite a bit of sunshine early this morning, not just at daybreak, but for a few hours thereafter. Now it's clouded up. We've seen a few spots where there's been a shower or two, mainly pretty light to this point. But heavier rains are expected later today. Just when? I'm not sure. Early this morning, we were watching some shower activity move through eastern Ohio, and looked like it was going to hit us, but it dissipated before it really got here. So we'll keep an eye on the radar for you throughout the afternoon and evening. I would stay close to my umbrella if I were you. I think we're going to need it at some point. Open talk on the first portion of the program today, a little bit later. Have you seen, if you're watching TV over the last few weeks, you've probably seen those announcements on some channels that they're going to be changing their frequencies, and you're going to have to rescan your TV. Have you seen any of those public service announcements? I have. So it's a little confusing to me. We'll find out what it all means. We will chat with a representative from the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. Her name is Jean Cadu, and we'll chat with her for a few minutes to find out what this is all about. It, as I understand it, it doesn't affect everybody, but it affects some people. And so if you're confused, as I am a little bit about this, we'll try to straighten it out a little bit later for you. And also today we'll be chatting a little bit later on the program with Lydia Dean, a woman who, with a husband and a relatively young family, some 20 years ago, decided that she didn't feel like she was fulfilling her purpose in life. And they pulled up stakes and moved to Europe, and they ended up going from place to place in many third world countries, trying to help out, even in a small way, those who were oppressed and needy. And she's written a memoir about that, saying that anybody in a small way can be a philanthropist. So we'll talk to Lydia Dean about that. But first, it's open talk here on the program today with you, the guests, deciding what we're going to talk about. Our phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. Do you use seatbelts when you're in the car? When you're driving, what about when you're a passenger? Do you buckle up automatically? I was kind of surprised to see the latest numbers here in Pennsylvania. Almost 90% of people buckle up now. I really didn't think that it was that high. Do you buckle up every time? If you're just hopping into the car to run down to the corner store? I sometimes don't. If I'm going on any sort of, not even an extended trip, but just going out on the highway, I buckle up. Yeah. The biggest segment of the population who does not use seatbelts, and again, this was surprising to me, it's younger people. Teens and young adults tend to not buckle up. Can you remember when seatbelts were introduced in cars? I can remember vaguely. I had a couple of cars. These were used vehicles, kind of classics. When I was still in school, they did not have seatbelts. And I can remember there was a time when you could buy seatbelts and install them yourself on a car. Or take it to a garage and, you know, have them install them. They didn't come factory equipped. And I had one car. It was a brand new car that was very strange. I can't remember what car that was. that there was some sort of a mechanism when you opened the door to get in on the driver's side, you automatically kind of half-stepped into this harness. And then when you closed the door, there was a motorized thing in there that moved the harness up to the top of the car and you were strapped in. It was an amazing contraption. It must not have been too popular because I never saw another car like that. But now, of course, all cars have seatbelts. Question is, do you use them? Do you use them? Okay, it's Open Talk at 283-2525, the number. Let's go to the phones. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi.
I have a question.
Yeah.
That I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. I am a diabetic, and I have to use the needles to give myself a shot.
Insulin,
what
right?
What do you do? Right. And these needles, I've been, like, putting in a coffee container.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the waste management does not allow you to put them in the garbage. So what do you do with them? What is the proper thing to do?
Well, that's interesting. I do not know. And to be honest with you, I know diabetics in my immediate family or circle of friends that I could, you know, relate to, but I never thought about it. When you're in a hospital or a doctor's office or something like that, they have those special boxes on the wall, you know, where you put the used syringes in, and somebody comes around, I guess, at the end of the day and collects them. But where they go after that, I do not know. I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
They have special
tube that you use with the insulin in it. What do you do with that?
Yeah. They have special collections once in a while for all kinds of stuff, hazardous materials, oil, paint thinner, but I never heard of anything like this for, I guess you would call it medical disposables, huh?
I suppose. So if anybody out there knows, please give a call.
What do you do with them now? Do you just have a big trash can full of them, or you must...
I just have two coffee containers full of them, and I don't know what to do with them. That's why I'm asking.
Well, maybe somebody knows and can give us some information on that. We'll see.
Okay, I thank you so much.
Thanks. Great question. Thanks. What do you do with, in her case, she's diabetic, has to take regular insulin shots. What do you do with the used syringes, the hypodermic needles? I don't know. I guess it would be the same with the EpiPen. For people who have severe allergies, you know, whether it's to peanuts or anything else that can cause your breathing passages to swell shut, even bee stings. Some people get stung with a bee, and boy, if they don't have an EpiPen handy, you know, they can be in deep medical trouble. What do you do with those after you? I don't know. The trash haulers, she said waste management, I think, was her trash hauler. They won't take them. Yeah, I can see the danger in, you know, trash haulers not wanting to pick them up. I don't know what you do with that stuff. Maybe the next time we chat with the Pennsylvania Resources people will ask. I mean, you can't take them to a hospital or anything. They've their own to get around. I don't know. Anybody know what to do with that stuff? Those used needles? 283-2525 is our number. Open Talk here on the program today. 283-2525. AAA came out with a story last week about the new entertainment systems in cars. We'll talk about that in a moment. Let's go back to the telephones right now. Our phone number is 283-2525. Hi there, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
I used to give my wife her allergy shots, and you could buy disposable containers at Walmart that your garbage haulers would accept.
They would accept them.
Yes. I mean, you need to call the we use Vogel basically in where we live, but if she, that lady calls her a garbage hauler, uh-huh, and finds out what is acceptable, at Walmart used to sell them, you could get about 100 syringes in a container.
So what you're saying is there's a difference between just tossing a syringe,
yes,
into the trash as opposed to, yeah, getting one of these containers,
yep,
sealed containers.
The most, I would imagine most carriers have an acceptable container that you can use for it,
mm-hmm,
that type of thing.
And you threw the whole container away and then you got a new one? Is that how that worked or what?
Yep, yep.
Were they expensive?
I don't remember. This is a few years ago, but $8 to $10, maybe, something like that.
Mm, that's not
that's
too bad.
Yeah.
Well, there are other reasons that people, I mean, diabetics would be probably the most common, but there are other conditions for which, yeah, people regularly have to get shots. So, you know, mm-hmm, this would be a concern for a lot of people, I would think.
Yeah, well, like I said, I used to give my wife her allergy injections, basically, and that's what we used. It was a container that was acceptable to our particular trash hauler.
There are some treatments now for arthritis, particularly rheumatoid arthritis, where people give themselves injections.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got these used syringes to deal with as well.
Yeah, wow. I would imagine it's just about any syringe, to be honest with you. It just happened to be allergy injections.
Did you have to learn how to give your wife those shots? Was it hard to do?
No, they're basically intramuscular, so it wasn't.
You didn't have to search.
Had to do it fast enough so it didn't hurt.
Didn't have to search for a vein or anything like that.
No. Oh, no. No, yeah. Not at all.
Well, thanks for the tip. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Sure.
Bye.
Hope that caller was still listening. Check with your trash hauler and see if they'll accept these special container boxes, and are they still available? You said they used to be able to get them at Walmart. I've never seen them, but I've never gone looking for them, quite frankly. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. AAA came out with a story, it was last week, as a matter of fact. In-vehicle infotainment systems especially distracting to older drivers. New research is suggesting, and it focuses on older drivers, that this could be the key to safer in-vehicle technology for everyone. I've wondered about this ever since we started to have the little video screens in cars, and that's probably been standard in many cars now for about the past 4 or 5 years. And some of them are getting bigger and bigger. I kind of want drivers to keep their eye on the road, not watching the video screen, you know? And there's so much on there anymore. There's all kind of stuff. 283-2525, the number. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hey, I had to go and give myself shots.
Uh-huh.
And what I did to dispose of the needles is just take them back to the doctor's office or, you know, to the hospital, and they have proper ways of getting rid of them.
Oh, they would accept them when you took them back? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Whenever I was at the doctor's, I said, well, how do I get rid of these needles? And they said, just bring them back. Or, you know, keep them, you know, put them back, in a, you know, gather them up and leave them in the thing. Just take them back to the doctor's and they have people come and dispose of them.
Did they charge you for that, for taking them back?
Huh? No, there was no charge, no nothing.
Hmm.
Just took them back to and said, here. And they said, okay, thank you.
Yeah. Well,
it was an easy way of getting, you know, safe way of getting rid of them.
Yeah. Well, that's more advice for that caller earlier. Thank you. Thanks for that very much.
All right, thank you.
Sure, thanks. Didn't have a real good connection there. I think you could understand, though, right? It almost sounded like that gentleman was outside with the wind blowing or something into his phone. And the wind is blowing in a few spots because we're looking for some marginal weather, maybe some storms as we head into the afternoon. How long have we been without significant rain? It's been about a week, hasn't it? We haven't had any, I mean, you know, a rare, strange pop-up shower. I can remember last Wednesday we had a couple of those. I remember specifically it was, usually I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but last Wednesday I had my car in the shop for, well, you know, the usual stuff, state inspection, oil change, and all that stuff. And while I was waiting for my car to be done, I started to hear this strange noise. It got louder and louder, and I realized it was torrential downpour on the roof of the shop. And I looked out, and sure enough, it was pouring. It rained for about 5 minutes. That was it. So, but that was Wednesday, so almost a week ago. And that wasn't everywhere. Those were just spotty showers. It was dry over the weekend. I noticed the last couple of days, first time I've seen cracked ground. Cracked ground. You know how the soil, you know, when it dries out, it'll crack. First time I've seen that all summer. Some spots in the lawn or in the flower bed where the soil was cracking, dried up. It was actually kind of nice to see because we had so much rain during the first half of the summer. And, you know, really, we're only about halfway through, maybe just a little past halfway through the summer. So we have a lot of warm weather yet, and hopefully drier than it's been in the first half of the summer. We are ahead of last year's record-setting for a wet summer, and we're already ahead of that pace. So we could use a good dry month or so. Next couple of days, we'll see some rain. Open talk here at 283-2525, the number 283-2525. We'll take a break and be back with more of the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR right after these words.
Applewood Chiropractic has wellness plans designed to assist with treatment and preventative care and include 6 bioimpedance analyses per year to help with wellness and fitness goals. Plus, you'll receive discounts on services and supplements like laser therapy or hemp extract oil. And some insurance companies may even cover your wellness plan with unlimited fitness center use. For details, call 724-283-0518. Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, Thornapple Drive in Butler.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare-certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Open talk on this segment of the It's Your Turn program. 283-2525 is our number. Saw a story in the Trib today about a high school band. It's Hempfield area, if you know where that is. Many of you live in school districts that will compete with Hempfield teams in sports and so on. It's outside of Greensburg, suburban Greensburg. Anyway, the band there at Hempfield area high school is going to be going to London to perform in a New Year's Day parade in London. And I was struck by the cost. They're asking each of the members of the Hempfield High School Marching Band to sell 1,000 hoagies because each of the students have to raise some big bucks to $3,800 to cover expenses. $3,800. Yeah, it was eyebrow-raising for me as well. We're seeing, you know, more and more of this for schools that are traveling and long distances. I don't mean just to another town or another part of western Pennsylvania to be in a parade, but all over the place. Butler area high school marching band did it for a while. I don't think they do it quite as much anymore. But they were traveling all over. Now, if it's a university band, that's a different story. Slippery Rock University marching band, the Marching Pride, went to Ireland this past spring. They marched in the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Dublin. But that's different. I'm talking about high school kids here. I personally think that's a little much to ask a high school kid, you know, a high school trumpet player or whatever, to raise $3,800 to participate in a band trip to London. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'm not a music teacher. Sometimes I think some of these band instructors, they're losing touch with reality. I was in a high school band. I was in a high school orchestra. It was a very enjoyable experience. I loved it. And I have good memories of it. But, I could certainly have never raised that kind of money. To go on a trip overseas or to Texas or California or Kentucky and is that valuable to kids that age? Well, travel is always nice, but, you have to balance it against the cost. $3,840. They're asking each of those kids to go to London for what, probably 3 or 4 days. Zip over, march in a New Year's Day. I didn't even know London had a New Year's Day parade, to be honest with you. And then fly back with all that. I don't know. It just seems to be going a little bit overboard to me. I mean, parents have enough expenses. I saw a story on the TV news, it was this past weekend, because back-to-school sales are underway. Many of the discount department stores, they've had back-to-school displays for a few weeks now. It's hard to believe it's July, and we're talking about that already. But most schools these days start back in late August. So, but at any rate, $400 is the average cost that parents are paying per student in back-to-school expenses. $400. Wow. And I guess in many schools these days, students have to provide their own school supplies, things like tablets and pencils and stuff. When I was in elementary school, we got all that for free. Even on the first day of class, you got a tablet. I can distinctly remember the ones we had in our school, and I can't believe this because it's, decades ago, but in elementary school, we got these tablets that were, they were called Clearfield tablets. And I think it was because it was the Clearfield Tablet Company, or they were made in Clearfield, PA, or something. But they had a map. Maybe you had these too. They had a map of Pennsylvania on the front of the tablet, the cover, if you will. They had all the counties, which, of course, as students, we proceeded to color in with pencil or pen or something like that, but every county. And then it was a tablet. And when you ran out of paper in your tablet, you asked the teacher for another one. And you got another one. And we were supplied with the pencils and pens. I guess in many places they don't do that anymore. Students are expected to have their own paper and pencils and stuff. We have had here at WISR, we've for a few years now had collections where we would stuff backpacks with school supplies for students whose families would be hard-pressed to afford that sort of thing. Times are changing, I guess, huh? But that's one of the reasons why I wonder, $3,840 for a quick trip to London to play in a marching band and a parade, then come right back again? I don't know. Sounds like a little bit overboard to me. Clearfield tablets. I wish I still had one of those things. I can see it in my mind's eye. And I'm almost positive that's what it was. Clearfield Tablet Company, something like that. long time ago. We are coming up quickly now on 5 minutes, actually coming up on 4 minutes before 1 o'clock. Nice to have you with us here on the It's Your Turn program today. Wanted to, maybe we can do this later in the week. Wanted to talk a little bit about Lyme disease. Anybody in your family or circle of friends come down with Lyme disease? There are some interesting theories on this. And when I first heard about it, I thought it was conspiracy theorists talking about where Lyme disease came from. We know where it was first named. It was in the city of Lyme, Connecticut. It's where we got the name of it, Lyme disease. But there are some folks who say it may have been accidentally started with some biological research. So, I don't know. I've been reading a little bit about that here and there recently. And, well, we'll see. Might be able to get somebody on to talk about that in a little bit more detail. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today is Butler Motor Tours. And here we are moving smartly through the summer now, but still plenty of time to take a trip for a day or two or maybe a week or two. And there are lots of great offerings remaining as we move through the summer now and into the autumn through Butler Motor Tours. In August, for example, how about a New York City Lady Liberty weekend? See the Statue of Liberty and all the other sites in New York City, Broadway, Central Park, World Trade Site, Times Square. Check it out. You can check out any of their trips online at their website, butlerbus.com. They're also taking another trip. In fact, they'll have two or three more as we move into the late summer and autumn out to Lancaster County to the Millennium Theater, where for many years now they've been presenting biblical epics live on stage. The show this year is entitled Jesus, and they're taking a two-day trip out there in August. There'll be another one later in the year. How about a trip to the beach? Rehoboth Beach in Delaware and Dover Downs Casino Hotel. That's a nice three-day trip in late August. They're also taking a one-day trip up to the Cleveland Air Show. That's on September the 1st. And into October, there'll be trips to see fall foliage in New England and other places. Next time you have a couple of minutes and you're online, click on their website, butlerbus.com. Butlerbus.com. You can do some browsing. All the trips are there, the dates, the itinerary, the cost, and everything. Butler Motor Tours has been around for a long time, more than 75 years. And they're ready to help you plan your next trip. Remember, Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. Butlerbus.com. We have another message, and then we're going to see if we can straighten out the whole deal with this. Some television channels are changing their frequencies, and some people have to rescan their TVs or their control boxes, or I don't know. Confusing to me. We'll talk with a representative of the FCC to see what's going on here. And we'll do that in just a moment. So stick around. More to come on It's Your Turn right after these words.
In 2019, Tri-Rivers celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
I'm Dr. Scott Rainey, an orthopedic back and neck surgeon at Tri-Rivers. Whether I'm in the office treating patients for conditions such as cervical or lumbar stenosis, or in the operating room performing innovative procedures like disc replacements, I'm proud to care for patients in the Butler community. To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
I thought it might be informative, listeners, to chat for a couple of minutes with a representative of the FCC about some of these announcements that you may be seeing on some of the Pittsburgh television stations about changing frequencies and how people have to rescan, and boy, it seems pretty complicated. We're going to chat with Gene Kiddo, who's chair of the FCC Incentive Action Task Force. Gene, can you tell us in a nutshell what this is all about? Why do we have to rescan, and what does that mean anyway?
Well, one of the things that we do at the FCC is make sure we use our TV airwaves as efficiently as possible. And we identified TV airwaves as an area that we could pack TV stations in a little bit tighter and free up some important spectrum for uses by mobile broadband providers for new capacity and higher speeds and 5G services. So about 1,000 stations nationwide are going to be changing their frequencies to accommodate this process, which involves basically not a channel change. Your local Pittsburgh stations are going to stay on their same channels that viewers are used to seeing and tuning to. But behind the scenes, the TV needs to be retrained to find those channels in a new area of the TV spectrum. And that's basically all that's happening here.
Now, I understand that it does not affect everyone. In fact, there's really only one group who will be affected by this, correct?
Well, first of all, it doesn't affect viewers who watch TV using a cable provider or a satellite dish provider. Those companies will take care of these changes in their network. So only viewers who watch TV with an over-the-air antenna, either rabbit ears indoor or on their roof, are going to be affected. And then in terms of the stations that are affected, it's about half the full power stations nationwide, so about 1,000 stations nationwide. There are a number of stations in the Pittsburgh area that are changing of some of the smaller stations, but a couple of the larger network-affiliated stations are changing as well. And they should be changing, really have been changing and will change by the end of this week.
I've seen some of these announcements about this on the stations, and I got to be honest with you, it seems a little confusing to me. It seems a little complex. What? How exactly do you go about this rescanning thing?
Well, it's something that if you watch TV with an antenna, you needed to do when you set up your TV. When you took it out of the box, the TV was not already programmed for local Pittsburgh stations. Manufacturers don't know where their TV is going to end up, so they basically, a TV needs to be trained to recognize all of the local channels that are available when a viewer sets up their TV for the first time. And basically what we're doing here is sort of the same thing. A viewer needs to do that again, because when the viewer set up the TV, it recognized, let's just say, channel 13 on a particular frequency, and now channel 13 is going to be located on a different frequency, so the TV needs to relearn that. It's a fairly simple process. You take the remote control, you go to the menu button or the setup button, and then there'll be something that'll say antenna or cable or auto-tune or scan, words like that. I wish all manufacturers used the same words so I could be able to say it in one word, but basically it takes 4 or 5 minutes, and what the TV does is it basically scrolls through all of the available frequencies and makes sure it's picking up the ones that it needs to see locally. And it takes, again, 4 or 5 minutes, and then the TV will be good to go. But we do have some resources, Dave, for folks who might need a little more help in getting that process done. First, we have on our FCC a lot of information about why this is happening, where it's happening, and how to rescan a TV. And that website is www.fcc.gov/TV-rescan. And then for viewers who need a little bit more help and need someone to help walk them through the process, we also have set up a dedicated call center that's open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. So if a viewer notices that a channel has seem to go on missing that they're used to seeing and needs help at prime time in the evening, the call center is available. And that number is 1-888-CALL-FCC, which is 1-888-225-5322. And there are folks who can help in both English and Spanish at the call center.
I guess what confused me more than anything else was in the instructions. It said you'll need to find your converter, box, remote control, and I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. If you don't have cable or satellite, you wouldn't have a converter box, would you?
I think what they're referring to there is, if you may remember, about 10 years ago, we took all TVs, went from analog service to digital service. Mm-hmm. And at that time, if you had an older TV that had one of those big fat TVs that was an analog TV, you needed a converter box to be able to take this digital signals and convert them so the analog TV could use them. Some people still have those old TVs, sometimes in a basement or someplace, and they're still using those converter boxes. So the converter box needs to be retrained, just like the new digital TVs need to be retrained to pick up the new signals in the new place. So that's the converter box. It's not a cable or a satellite converter box like you're used to seeing if you have that service. This is an older TV converter box that you may still have from over 10 years ago.
Do you need to do this just once or more than once, Jean?
Well, it's happening in phases, and there are sometimes multiple phases in a particular market. I think that in Pittsburgh there are a lot of stations that are moving, as I said, right as we speak, over the course of this week. But there may be other stations in the local area. Some of your listeners may actually be able to pull in, for example, Johnstown stations, and there may be those may be changing at a different time. So a good rule of thumb is if a channel that a viewer is used to seeing on their over-the-air TV goes missing, the first thing they should do is to rescan the TV, and chances are that'll pick it up again. And by the way, if a viewer hasn't done that in a while, maybe since they even set up the TV for the first time, they may well find that there are additional channels that local broadcasters have brought online over the past couple of years that they didn't even know that they could receive. So there may be additional programming available for free that a viewer didn't know about.
Now, by the way, there are many millions of people nationwide who do get their TV signal this way. One final question, Gene. Why are we doing this anyway? Why do we have to change the frequencies?
Well, one of the things we do at the FCC is make sure that we use the airwaves as efficiently as we can, and we identified the broadcast airwaves as an area that we could repack into a tighter group so that we could free up space to meet the American consumer demand for more and more wireless broadband capacity for their cell phones and tablets and computers, who want to stream more and more services, who want apps that use greater and greater capacity, and for the new 5G services that are starting to come online over the course of the next couple of years. So we pack the broadcasters into a tighter grouping, if you will, in order to free up space and make that extra capacity available for wireless carriers.
And once again, listeners, this only affects viewers who get their local TV channels using a TV antenna. If you subscribe to cable or satellite TV, you do not need to rescan. Gene, could
you
thank
you? You may see the messages, but you don't need to do anything.
Yes, exactly. Gene Cadu, chair of the FCC Incentive Auction Task Force. Thanks for straightening us out here, Gene. Nice to talk with you today.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for getting the word out.
Sure. Gene Cadu from the FCC, Federal Communications Commission. And again, we don't want to make it any more confusing than it already is. This applies only to people who receive their local channels using a TV antenna. If you are a cable subscriber, which I am, Armstrong Cable, then no problem. Or if you have a satellite dish, any of the satellite companies, no problem. They'll take care of that. But if you receive your local channels using a TV antenna, and there are, it used to be everybody a long time ago, but there are still many people. Some people have changed back to antennas. And you're the ones that are going to have to do this rescanning. And you may have to do it more than once, as some of the stations are switching over, changing frequencies at different times over the next few weeks. More to come on It's Your Turn. We'll take a quick break and we'll chat with our next guest in just a moment.
Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment, proudly presents the Skyliners. It's been 60 years since they topped the charts with Since I Don't Have You, but this famous Pittsburgh doo-wop group continues to thrill their fans. See the Skyliners live and in concert at Tanglewood, Saturday, August 10th. Doors open at 6, dinner buffet by Chef George at 7, showtime at 8. Only $35, and as always, it's BYOB. For tickets, call 287-0021.
An interesting story, listeners, on the It's Your Turn program. My name is Dave Malarkey. We'll be chatting with guest Lydia Dean, who joins us by telephone today. Lydia, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
We want to talk about a book that you've written. It's part memoir. It's part of a travel book. It's a wonderful experience. It's called Jumping the Picket Fence. And we'll explain where that title comes from just a little bit later. This all started, about 20 years ago, I guess, Lydia, right?
Yeah, time flies. Yeah, it did.
You were
still unfolding, but yeah, it started.
You were married. You had a young family. You were living in Orlando, Florida, and you decided to pick up, jump the picket fence, so to speak, and move to France. Why did you do that, Lydia?
Well, we were, nearing our 30s and in such a good spot. This was the kind of interesting thing. We were headhunters and had our own consulting firm. We had two young kids, a lovely house, and a picket fence that I could see from my home office every day. And so we're kind of living what we hope to build in life, or what we're taught, or what we're supposed to aspire to. And it was very kind of far from the dreams that I had as a child. And I didn't quite realize how disconnected I had become from what was kind of in my heart and soul as a kid. And I'd always dreamed of, I was fascinated by the world's caretakers, Mother Teresa and Gandhi, and I loved to travel, and I dreamt of traveling. And, these two things, I think I just, I shoved them in a box in the back of my mind, because I didn't quite know, how I was going to build a life around those things. And then when you get on this track of quote, success, or how we defined success at that time, it's very hard to get off of it. And so I'd stare at this picket fence, and I wouldn't think about all that I had and that I was doing. I was thinking about seeing the world and about helping it to become a better place. And I was terribly, terribly unhappy. So, the book starts there, because it's hard to know what steps to take when you feel like you have it all, but it's not what you want. And then you feel guilty about being in that spot, which is where it all started.
I want to make sure that our listeners understand that, as I mentioned, this is kind of part travelogue as you travel around the globe, but much, much more than that, because you are interested in philanthropy and what you call the everyday philanthropist. I mean, everybody's heard of Bill Gates and, some other people who have, very generously donated millions of dollars. You say the average person can do this, right, Lydia? You can become an everyday philanthropist.
Well, I very much believe in that, and I believe it's the term that we've lost a connection to, because we associate it with people who have a lot of money, who sit around the boards of, exceptional things, and so it's not accessible. That word has taken on a meaning that, just kind of your everyday person, like me. I was a mom and a working mom, and I dreamt of finding a path that would lead me to connect to humanity, and it's a difficult one to find in our world right now. It really is. We're not encouraged to do it, and it's not clear how we can do it. So it is clear that if you have millions, you can be a philanthropist. But the journey to helping people in places where there's a great degree of marginalization and a lack of access to our basic needs, it's not as simple as just having a big checkbook. It just isn't, and that's what I learned. And I also learned that I, little me, could walk that path, and I could find that. And it didn't always take sort of a direct line A to B. I fumbled around a lot, and we moved to Europe initially. essentially, and quit our jobs and kind of lived off of a rental income. And we began slowly to make our way around the world and to listen to it and to experience it and to see what people needed. And I learned about a very different type of philanthropy, and one that, you know, was available to all of us, and where I believe that, and I've seen now over the course of, you know, over 10 years, how small actions can make a tremendous amount of difference in places around the world, and that we shouldn't create this barrier between, you know, us and, quote, them, because it's just not necessary. So the metaphor of jumping the picket fence is, you know, is more than one. It was a physical barrier between me and the rest of the world. It was my mental barriers that I felt like I couldn't get to that life that I wanted. You know, it's the superficial barriers that separate us as human beings on the planet. And the word philanthropy means love for humanity and caring for humanity. It doesn't mean, you know, wearing a black suit and sitting around a big table and having millions of dollars. It doesn't. And I think we need to redefine that so that people feel more able to connect, reach, and be a part of some of the world's problems that, frankly, we have to work on together.
You eventually were able to visit a number of places around the world where there are problems of poverty or other things, and we'll talk about those in just a couple of minutes or so. But you did start out moving the family to the south of France. That's not exactly an area that we would think of as poverty stricken. Did you go there initially just because, hey, it would be nice to live there for a while, and then this other thought began to grow as you settled into France?
Well, our move over here was actually one of convenience, because my family is European, and my dad had a little village house here in the south of France. So initially, we came over to spend a year. My husband brought the business with him and was able to kind of do work over the phone and internet. And, you know, but I think the 1 year in Provence turned out to be seven. But what it did was, it gave us, that first step was the time and space to begin to think about what we wanted from life and what we were willing to sacrifice and what we weren't. And what we figured out in the first year was that, you know, we have all of this beautiful opportunity in life, and, you know, we can't, we shouldn't ignore what tugs at our heart and soul and what is speaking to us as things that matter to us. And so we gave ourselves this year of kind of time to think. And that really opened the door for us to reconnect with those passions and begin to just put one foot in front of the other that led that way to what we eventually built in terms of a philanthropic travel company and helping to build a foundation. So sometimes that first step is not the big grand step into the, you know, right into what you want to do, but, you know, a series of small steps that lead in that general direction. And at the time, we just didn't know, I didn't know how to get to that life of one where we were contributing to the world. I just know we had to do something. So it was a first step, and one that, you know, allowed us to kind of see what the next step was going to be, if that makes any sense.
Well, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are saying, well, okay. I mean, it's one thing to write a check to support an overseas charity or an overseas cause, but it's quite a different thing to decide to connect in person and to take the time to, you know, really genuinely listen and understand what people in other places need. You eventually co-founded or founded a group called Go Philanthropic. Can you tell us about that group? What is it? What do you do?
Sure. Well, as I was trying to figure out how to get to all of this, I took the next step for me was to take a volunteer vacation to India to work in an orphanage, and I went away for 2 weeks and, you know, taught English and came home and really felt like it was. You know, nobody really benefited from that time. We had no curriculum to teach from, and I was, you know, I questioned where some of the donated items that we had brought as a group, where they went, and we didn't understand the culture, we didn't speak the language. I mean, it was just kind of a ridiculous attempt at you know, serving, and it did nothing. So I came home and I said, we've got to do something more effective with somebody's desire to want to share and do something and to give back, and where programs and people can actually benefit from that. So I put together the concept of Go Philanthropic Travel, which essentially put together itineraries for people to travel to different places around the world, but weaved into their journey would be visits to nonprofits who are doing amazing things with little resource. And the dual benefit was that the programs would have an opportunity to share with a broader international community what they were doing. And it gave a voice to what they were doing. And for a traveler, it gave them a deeper understanding of the issues that are present in the world right now, and an opportunity to connect with those programs and to be a support to what they were doing already well. So that that later led into the creation of a foundation, as we wanted to spend more time with programs and listen at a deeper level to what it is that they needed in their communities. So it is two entities, both a travel company that offers journeys to fantastic programs, and also a foundation that partners with various NGOs and nonprofits working on some very, very difficult issues of our time, like human trafficking and child labor and, you know, lack of access to basics. So, it's a platform for learning and a way for people to partner with people who have found solutions to their problems. They don't necessarily need us to do it for them.
We have a few more minutes to chat with Lydia Dean. Listeners, we'll take a quick break and pick up our conversation with her here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Everyone's trying to beat the heat, so why bring it into your kitchen? There's no need to slave over a hot stove when you can go to Michael's Restaurant. They're cooking burgers, hoagies, pizzas, soups, and salads to feed the entire family. So relax, stay cool, and take the family to Michael's Restaurant, Route 422 in Butler.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. We're chatting with Lydia Dean, author of Jumping the Picket Fence. And we were just chatting before the break there about Go Philanthropic, the U.S.-based organization that she has founded. You mentioned you first went to India. What other parts of the world have you visited over the years as you traveled to countries facing poverty and child labor and so on? Lydia, where else have you been?
India, Nepal, Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos, Thailand, Venezuela, Guatemala, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, quite a few. I mean, I feel very, very fortunate to have had the opportunity to see what's out there, because, you know, I think it's very easy, and we all know this, and it's somewhat cliche, but, you know, we have access to so much more than much of the world has on a daily basis. And when we actually see that and understand at a deep level that inequity that's out there, we can't help but want to make that right, because it's just not, it's not the way it was meant to be. It is not, we're not meant to be so imbalanced, and it's our right as human beings to have the basics that we need to become the best that we can each be. So,
did you have to do some convincing to your husband to get him and your family to jump the picket fence, Lydia? How did that all happen?
Well, yeah, it was. Let's say it was a process, and it wasn't a pretty one at the beginning. You can imagine. You know, mid-20s and doing well. And that's not the time where you ask your husband to kind of leave it all. And if you are going to ask him to do that, you kind of want a plan for what that means and what, where you're going and what you want to do. And I had none of those things. I just had this gut feeling, this very strong gut feeling that there was something that we needed to experience, and that it wasn't on our suburban street. That's not to say, though, that we can't come to some of these conclusions and have an ability to be engaged in the world, that we can't do that from suburbia, because we can. I believe in deeply. For me, I had to hit the road. And for our family, that was, you know, our journey that, you know, was unique to us. But I don't think that everybody needs to do that. But yes, it was a difficult beginning. And, you know, as they say, when mom's not happy, nobody's happy. And he was, he's very much a part of the story, because without that kind of love and trust that we had together as a couple, I don't know that anything, you know, the story could have unfolded the way that it did, because he was willing, without knowing where we were going or what we were going to do on that journey, he was willing to take the risk to find it, whatever that was. And we look back and say, oh, thank God, you know, thank God that we jumped, because so many beautiful things unfolded afterwards.
It's difficult enough to move occasionally from place to place here in the U.S. I can't imagine what an adventure, how exhausting it must have been to move. You know, you settle down, you make friends, and then the next thing you know, you're packing up and moving again. And you had young kids too, right, at the time?
Yeah, we moved when they were 3 and 5, and we moved into a little village in the south of France where nobody spoke English. And, you know, when we woke up during the day, it was, you know, the day was full of incredible joys, you know, just, you know, the fresh food and the cheese and, you know, everything that France is known for, rural France, you know, the nature, and also frustrations, you know, not being able to get the internet set up and buy a car and the basics of, you know, getting through the day. But it was really neat, because we were all, even the little ones, we were all, you know, kind of really alive again. It just brought us all to life. And yeah, we had some difficult moments, but we were on this high of, you know, of seeing how much else there was out there to live and experience. And that's why after the year was up, we couldn't go home, because we all felt like we were just getting started. The kids were completely fluent after 6 or 7 months of going to village schools. And, you know, we had found, you know, joy in a simpler life than we were living in Orlando. You know, we were quite caught up, as one does get caught up in, you know, figuring out what private schools to send the kids to and, you know, what drapes we wanted for the house. And, you know, and when we moved to the south of France, it was about something different. And, you know, that was really refreshing to us, and it was a bit of a reboot and a reminder of, you know, how experience is just so valuable. So we ended up staying for many years.
What inspired you to adopt a child from China when you visited China, Lydia?
Well, we actually hadn't visited China. I had been to many other places around the world, and at that point had seen the scale and scope of need out there, and how many children were, you know, starting their lives without love, care, protection. And we had just felt so fortunate, and we felt that there was room in our family for more. So we looked at various options. The adoption landscape, international adoption, has changed quite a bit. There was, you know, a lot of corruption in the arena, and it isn't the same now as it was back then, but we had various options to choose from, and we decided to go with China. And, you know, that has been its own journey in itself. Adoption is, you know, a very different experience than having your own children. It should never be compared. It's a different fruit, and a very, very beautiful one at that. But again, not you know, not always easy. When you start off in life and you've been separated from your birth mother and birth family and country, our child also had medical issues. You know, that's a tough place to start in life. And you know, we've had to work together as a family to you know, to help her find her own strength, which she has.
It's quite a story, listeners, the story of this one. A woman's calling to discover her passions and then her really extraordinary pilgrimage around the globe, raising awareness and raising funds for people fighting for basic human rights. And the title of the book is Jumping the Picket Fence, and the woman who experienced all this and then writes about it is Lydia Dean. We've been chatting with her on this segment of It's Your Turn. Nice to talk with you, Lydia. And by the way, is your book available on the usual places where we find books these days?
Absolutely. It's on Amazon. You can find information on Go Philanthropic just by putting in Go Philanthropic in Google. You come up with both the travel company and the foundation. So all easily found.
Nice to talk with you, Lydia. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.
Soul, but what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, my hands are shaking and my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on